Kaydediyorsun. So the topic is Darshan, which is relating to the deities and we can approach the topic of deity worship from many angles. For people from India, deity worship is very natural. Sometimes for people from the West, it's more difficult, especially if they have like festivals. Especially if they are from a Protestant background, because there are no images, or people from Muslim background, they have great difficulties with deities. So, what about deities? In a way, we can say Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is all-pervading. Krishna is always present. Krishna is present in any place, any condition. But we're not able to see Krishna face to face in our conditioned state. So therefore, the deities give us an access to Krishna that we don't usually have. Because the deities, they must be treated like Krishna. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, it is said that deities should be worshipped just like a king in royalty. They should be in a palace, they should be on a throne, and they should be given all the needs of that king should deserve. Very opulent foodstuffs and nice places to stay. So we're seeing that here in front of us, golden throne, quite often. So the deity is worshipped in royalty, when they came. The best goes to the deities. That was traditionally in India the case. People would live in relatively simple cottages, but for the deities, a big flat, big palace. Same maybe in Sydney, people live in flats, and Krishna has a marble temple. So, like that, the royalty is there. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that when Krishna appears in this world, he doesn't appear alone. He brings the spiritual world with him. So as he brings the spiritual world along, we can understand that the altar is not just any place, it is the spiritual world. Not only is the deity Krishna, but the altar is also the spiritual world. Then, those who are serving on the altar are not really qualified as residents of the spiritual world. If we would leave our bodies today, would we go back to Godhead? Would we be ready? And everybody sort of would feel like, well, maybe not completely, or maybe completely not. But who would think, yes, well, no problem, yeah, I'll go, surely, yeah, I'm qualified. So we all have that little bit of doubt whether we are qualified enough. Because in the spiritual world, one must be 100% pure. There's no impurities in the spiritual world. So although the altar is like the spiritual world, there's a special concession. We are allowed to be there, providing we have made a commitment. That commitment is recognized through initiations. The first initiation is giving us a opportunity to give our life to Krishna, to no longer be a slave of the senses, to no longer be engaged in all kinds of sinful activities. But the first initiation is setting us on the proper path, the path of pure devotional service. But internally, we are still full of material desires, full of sinful desires, and so on. And we don't have that much knowledge or realization. Then the second initiation comes, and in the second initiation, what is recognized is that we have knowledge and that we're dedicated to act like that. That's the Brahminical platform. So it is at that stage one is allowed to go on the altar, because one can remember this is not an ordinary place, this is actually the spiritual world, this is not a statue, this is actually Krishna, and so on. But because we are not actually on the platform of pure devotional service, therefore whatever we do on the altar is completely bound by strict rules and regulations. You cannot make any move according to your own idea. Whenever you go on the altar, everything is prescribed. Nothing by chance. You can't, even if you're second initiate and you're allowed to be on the altar, you can't just go and sit there. Say, well, I'll check my japa there today. Close darshan. Be nice. No, not allowed. Everything prescribed. So in this way we are in the spiritual world to an extent, in another extent we are not, but at least we're acting according to rules and regulations. So in deity worship there is an external site and a more internal site. So the external site is the site of rules and regulations. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described that deity worship was introduced when the sages saw that people were not respectful to one another. When they saw that even Vaishnavas and Brahmanas were not acting respectful among one another, and then deity worship was introduced to regulate the external behavior, because everything is prescribed with the rules and regulations. Just like sort of temple is also an extension of that deity worship, and then there are so many rules. You have to bow down in the temple, for example. You have to take off the shoes and many things. Many rules are given. One is not supposed to fight in front of the deities. One is not supposed to wear red and blue in front of the deities, because red is such a color that it zooms in the eyes, like, and one takes away from Krishna. So one is not meant to pull all the attention to himself. The attention is for Krishna. That's what's behind it. One is not meant to come in a temple being carried on a palanquin. The queen or the king is being carried in. Because again, it takes away from Krishna. So, in the temple, Krishna is the center. And that, of course, is the mood of the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, Krishna is the center. But there it's kind of, it's out of love. And everyone is so overwhelmed with love for Krishna that everyone is 24 hours a day thinking about service for Krishna, different ways to serve Krishna. So the deities are training us in that way, because a lot of service is required, so much. So in the external way, our activities get regulated, we are trained, we are cooking for the deities so many times a day, putting the deities to rest, and treating them like persons. Impersonalism is a material contamination. We do not just have the contamination of material desire, that we want to enjoy the material energy, but we also have that contamination of impersonalism, where our capacity to love and to really give ourselves in service, in loving service, has diminished. We have to learn. We don't have it. We can't do it. It's very difficult. And so in the service of the deity, one can again awaken that kind of mood, because once you have deities, it goes on, it never stops. It's always, it's every day. It's nice to have deities, beautiful, attractive, spiritual atmosphere, but then it's every day. That can be demanding. There are days that it's difficult. But persons are like that. They always have their need. When we speak about darshan, then it's more the internal that we are, in a way, speaking about. Because the word darshan means to see. And who is seeing? Krishna? Or are we seeing? And of course, we remember that Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said that one should act in such a way that Krishna will see us. And that is, that's a challenge. It is said, Krite Yajayato Vishnu Tritiyam Jajate Makai Dvapra Paricharyayat Kalota Harikirtana. That in the Krite Yuga, in the Satya Yuga, in the Yuga of goodness, then meditation is the process for the age. In the age of Treta Yuga, Yajna sacrifice, fire sacrifices, are the process. In Dwapara Yuga, deity worship. And in Kali Yuga, Kalu Tathari Kirtana, it's Kirtan. So in this day and age, deity worship is very difficult to perform. And we are, I don't know how others are doing, but I know for myself that every day when I do my puja, I make mistakes. Every day. Yeah? Today, I forgot the scent. Everything ready. Did I put that scent or did I not put that scent? And maybe I did. And maybe I didn't. I wasn't sure. And my nose is not working well at the moment. due to springtime. So I didn't smell it either if I put the scent or not. So then what to do? Well, we know from Mother Sachi that she would sometimes have this problem in making offerings. She would make an offering to Nimai, and she'd make an offering to the deities, and then she wasn't sure, did I offer or not? Then she looked, and then the bowls were empty. She goes, I must have forgotten. And then she offered again, and she kept on offering like this. And then one day, Nimai, who had taken sannyas at that time and lived in Puri, one day there was a message that, yes, tell Mother Sachi that I'm actually always eating her offerings. Anyway, so Mother Sachi, when she wasn't sure, she did it again. So this morning also, I did it again. Just decorated, and I go with Shiva, washed him again, put the oil, decorated again. Such is life. So deity worship is like that. It requires pure commitment. One cannot do half work. As soon as there's any doubt, then it's not good enough. Anything half work is not good enough. Even cutting some fruit for the deity is not just cutting some fruit, quickly rinsing an apple and cutting it. Forget it. Peel the apple and the whole thing, you know. Make it nice, then, like that. It has to be first class, not second, not third. Of course, there's the sankirtan offering on the road. Those ones we see in Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami was a sankirtan devotee. He was a preacher and he was living very renounced. He had no temple, he had no altar, and somehow or other got a big deity. And so he didn't want to put the deity on the ground. So it's not proper to put a deity on the ground. How can you put a deity on the ground? No, that I cannot do. So then he just hung the deity in a tree with some rope. But you may say, well, how can you hang a deity in a tree? You know, is that proper? Anyway, better than on the ground, like that. So he hung him, not around the neck though, but I get under the armpits. So, in this way, and he was making offerings very simple, because he himself was living very simple. He was just living from begging, and he was getting a little, it was in Vrindavan where they eat roti, so get some atta, some flour to make roti. So he make it into a bowl, throw the bowl in the hot ashes, and eat that. He's offering that to the deity. And the deity, of course, one day spoke to him and said, can I have some salt? And Sanatana Goswami chastised him and said, look, you know, we are renunciates. How can we don't have salt. Yeah, we don't have salt. We just take it as it is. Krishna made his own arrangements, and one day there was a ship that got stuck in a storm on a bank of the river. And because Sanatana Goswami had previously been the prime minister in Bengal, therefore they asked, they sent the owner of the ship to Sanatana Goswami for advice. So Sanatana Goswami told him two things. He said, do some service for Mother Mohan, then you'll get blessings. And the other thing is, pull the ship towards the eastern direction and it will come off the bank. So the men did so, and workers pulled, and they got the ship off the bank. So then he was very grateful, and he asked Sanatan Goswami what he could do for him. And Sanatan Goswami said to the ship owner, "Why don't you build a temple for Mama Noha?" And then the ship owner agreed to build that temple. And of course, the ship was loaded with salt. Yeah, so this story of Mama Noha is a famous story. But it's interesting, besides the story that you know, still I told it, and it's interesting to see how here Sanatan Goswami, as a Sankirtan devotee, made Sankirtan offerings and offered the Lord a very simple kind of style of worship according to his renounced ashram. As a mendicant, he was living under trees. So as a mendicant, obviously, his standard of worship was not the same as here in the temple. And clearly also not expected to be the same. So that is also there. But for the householder has more responsibility, since they have a nice house. So they have a nice house, then Krishna should also have. Should have better than them. You cannot, it's really not right to give Krishna a lower standard than you have yourself. That is the principle. So the principle, although deity worship is bound by rules and regulation, it's not ritualistic. Ritualistic means that there is a certain process made up of rules and regulations, and if you execute that nicely, then you complete the ritual and you get the benefit. But this is not ritual, it's personal. And according to your personal situation, there are different degrees of rules that are to be followed. And according to your personal needs, you have to offer. Therefore, it's not exactly ritualistic. Rather, it's very personal. We're serving Krishna personally. Because as I said, for Dwapara Yuga especially, the Yuga Dharma was deity worship, and now in the age of Kali, it is different. It's not deity worship. So therefore, for the age of Kali, deity worship, why is it still introduced if kirtan is the process? Kirtan meaning glorification of Krishna. In this age, the essence is to describe the glories of Krishna, to speak about Krishna's unlimited qualities and glories and so on. Why is it so? It is so that deity worship is very potent, but the tendency in this age is to take it cheaply and to not do it with much care. And how much can we be serious about it? Today we worship them and tomorrow they're in the books. And put to rest. Some devotees found that it was becoming very difficult to worship the deities, they had no pujaris, and they suggested that they should put the deities to rest in the ground. That was a little drastic, but some devotees suggested that. And then it happened to be so that by Krishna's arrangement, the local GBC was quite learned, and he started to recite poems from Nietzsche describing God is dead and the funeral of God. When they heard all that, then they changed their mind. It's like, okay, maybe we can't put it to rest. Maybe we can't have a funeral of God. So, Krishna made arrangements. Yeah, so, but I have seen many devotees who put the deities to rest. To rest means put him in a box. Yeah, so that you cannot do. Hari Bhakti Vilas says that if you accept deities, not only are you responsible to worship those deities throughout your life, but you're even responsible to make sure that they're worshipped after your life. So, you know, you've worshipped them nicely your whole life, you die, and there they sit. Uh-oh. Not good. Excuse me. I know the garment has been made with love and devotion, but is it alright if I offer it to Durva?
Yes.
So the aspect of duty is there, and that's all part of the external. In this day and age, you can't really do deity worship without kirtan, because the Yuga Dharma is kirtan. Our deity worship is quite simple compared to intricate standards in scriptures are very, very elaborate, very complicated. I know some devotees who were from traditional South Indian Brahmin families, and one devotee told me, he said, my father, he would every day start his puja at 6 in the morning, and that goes till 12 noon, and then after that he breaks his fast, as he does every day. So who's ready for that? Yeah, most of us go 6 in the morning till 12 noon, and then you break your fast, and every day, and that's a bit... So it is actually quite simple, very much simplified our standard. Because the essence is not so much in individual, the essence is in personal care. Maybe in some temples they put a lot of effort in offering different substances in this way and that way, and we are maybe a little less developed in that area. But our deity worship is very much developed in dressing. Right? No one dresses deities like in our movement. Right? You don't see that, you know. Of course, under the influence of our movement, in Vrindavan, the standard of deity worship came up in dressing. Actually, other temples started to put more emphasis. Before, they used to dress more simple. Now, it's better than before. But still, in Prabhupada's movement, a lot of emphasis is there on dressing the deity very opulently. And it is, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Kirtanananda, and he said, if you dress the deity very beautiful, then you will forget everything about the beauty of the material world. You should therefore every day try and make the deity as beautiful as you can, so that every time you look at the deity, you think, oh, amazing. That's how it should be. That's sort of the perfection. Then we forget about the beauty of the material world. So that is important. Yeah, as far as the altar being the spiritual world, although I said we are not qualified to be residents of the spiritual world, but still we're remembering that the altar is the spiritual world, and that means that it's Krishna's world, and it centers around Krishna. It's for Krishna's purpose. So we are there for Krishna's purpose. We're not there for getting some purification. We're not there to get some blessings. We're not there for anything like that. We are there to make sure that Krishna gets the best arrangements for his comfort. And that's what we're there for. And because that's the spiritual world. It's Krishna's need, not our need, you see. So when we come in the temple and we pray for our things, then we're missing actually the point. Then we're still in the, then we haven't fully come to worshipping the deity in the proper mood. Come to the deity, bless me, give me health, wealth, and so on. Prayers. So, deity worship, besides dressing, besides making offering, is accompanied by prayers. In the nectar devotion, which basically outlines for us the process of devotional service, there are two types of prayers described. One type is known as Vandanam, and the other one is known as Vigyakti. So Vandanam is a type of prayer where you recite the prayers of great devotees. And Prabhupada stressed that as the main means of prayer for us. And that's why in the morning, Govindam Adipurusam Tamaham Bhajami, Brahma Samhita, prayers of Lord Brahma, who is very intelligent, very qualified, and in this way, very glorifying Krishna, very expertly. When we are glorifying any personality, then it's not that you just say anything, glorification means that we must see some qualities. We must see qualities and describe these qualities. Yeah. And they must be genuine. That is glorification. Anyway, so train station, and where was I before that? Prayers, yes. So, we're chanting the prayers of great acharyas because there we are entering into sentiments which are of a much higher nature. If we make our own prayers, then soon enough we're going to pray for something, right? That is relating to our material situation. If it's not give me health and wealth, or let me pass my exam, or something like that, then it's please give me strength for my spiritual pursuits. You know, then we start to pray like that. Yeah, that's our predicament. Therefore, the prayers of the acharyas, and we see in these prayers of the acharyas that they describe the qualities of Krishna, and they glorify Krishna for his qualities, first. They also ask for mercy. They have also... prayer generally goes hand in hand with asking for a benediction. There's always some sort of benediction. Of course, the devotees ask the benediction of pure devotional service. That's their interest. Anyway, so prayers of the acharyas is there. Then the other type of prayer that is mentioned is vigyapti. These are prayers that are personal prayers, one's own personal prayers. But generally, this is the business of great devotees, right, who genuinely express a mood of feeling separated from Krishna, or intense longing for service. And we find many such prayers. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, they wrote many of these kind of prayers. For us, maybe a bit premature at this stage to start doing that. So, and of course, there is kirtan. When deity worship is is not accompanied by kirtan, then in this age it's incomplete. You can do the biggest puja, but when kirtan is missing, and then your deity worship is lacking something. Yeah. Prabhupada even recommended that in every household deity worship would be going on, and that the family members would assemble and have some kirtan every day. That was his recommendation. So yeah, of course in the temple, it's always accompanied by kirtan, by glorification of Krishna. Because that is the more potent way to awaken our internal love for Krishna. But the deity worship is also important because it's the deity worship that makes us regulated. Without the deities, why would you get up early? And without the deities, 5 o'clock is also early. 6 o'clock is still early. Six is early without the deities. But in the temple, where Mangalarti is at 4:30, 6 o'clock is late. Yes. You missed it all.
God, so late. Well, 6 o'clock.
Not that late. So deity worship immediately regulates everything. It regulates our behavior in many ways. But, and we can see that a lot of the things that we do are relating to deity worship. For example, the whole dress, traditional, so-called traditional dress here, of like dhoti or kurta and all these kind of things, or dhoti and chadar, tilak, it's all related to deity worship. That is also deity worship. You put tilak, you're installing the deity on your body, and he protects you. Keshava, there he is, on your forehead. Om Keshava, Lord Narayan, the abdomen, yes. And, you know, Madhava, Govinda, it's like that. Different, 12 different deities installed on the body. So this way they say that tilak makes the body into a temple. I mean, not just, you know, but by installing these deities, walking around like the 12 deities on the body. So that's, again, Lord Chaitanya would send anybody back home if they didn't put tilak. They come to his assembly, just go back. So that's the dress also. Now, some devotees feel that what about dress? Do we have to wear this kind of dress? Well, I think in deity worship, yes. I think so. And if we actually worship the deity strictly, then we should worship this kind of dress. It, of course, at home may be different. You know, it may be different. You go to work and, you know, tie and suit or fashionable office dress and there you go. You know, just whatever. Well, or say home clothes, that's all right. But if you have the higher standard, the temple standard, then it will have to be these clothes. So there's something called Krishna West, which is saying, well, why wear these kind of clothes? I think Krishna West is good. I think it's something that accommodates many people who want to live in the world and practice their Krishna consciousness while comfortably being part of society at large. And I think that's fine. But still, I think that Krishna wears a dhoti, right? And therefore that ultimately there is something like a dress code of the spiritual world. There are clothes of the spiritual world. I think I remember that when I grew up, right, in Europe, we were wearing gray pants with a crease. You know, the kind of office clothing, you know, if people still wear that. But kind of formal pants, that was. And, you know, definitely not jeans. No, there were no jeans. When I was a kid, there were no jeans. That was only when I was about 13, 12 or 13, that the jeans started to come in. You know, then the in crowd would wear jeans. The guys with the long hair and so on, they would wear jeans and t-shirts. Nobody else. Again, I came after. Everybody started to wear jeans. And then when jeans, for a while, jeans came in and was free time clothing. That was after office hours, people would put on jeans. So, not before, and yeah, free time closing, because it has a different mood. It has that kind of mood, let it all hang out, you know, like kind of like, anything goes, that kind of clothes. Yeah, different than formal clothes, right, which sort of etiquette and behavioral standard, all the stuff that he kind of rules, I call it these kind of clothes. Right? So clothes have a certain way of life with them. So this dress is a dress that is part of a culture. And Vedic culture. We don't know so much about Vedic culture. Even in India today, Vedic culture is not completely intact. Even scripturally, it's not intact, because all the sanskaras that Vedic scriptures recommend, we can no longer perform because the scriptures are lost. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura mentioned that only 6% of the scriptures, of Vedic scriptures, were still available. And that's, 1850. I mean, now there's a bit more that's sort of disappeared. So if you really want to fully restore Vedic culture, it will be difficult. In India, also, so many things have come in from outside. Yes, or someone's ritual has been added. Even the pandit doesn't know why these things are done. And if you ask him, you're not supposed to ask. Exactly. Okay, how dare you? Are you questioning? The authority of the Vedas. This is tradition. This is how it's done. Not tradition. We have the story of the marriage party, and this lady is organizing the marriage, and everything is arranged, everything in the right place. Then at the last moment, there's a black cat. Right there, and he said, "Black cat, bad luck." So what to do now? Last minute, she grabbed an empty basket from the flowers, put it over the cat. And somehow or other, during the whole yoga, that cat was quiet. Thank God. So many years later, her daughter now was making arrangements for the marriage. And she arranged everything, and everything was fine. That's last minute inspections, everything there. Yes. We forgot the cat. We need a black cat. Very important. It's tradition. You must have a black cat. So brought the black cat, put under the basket. And that is why in every marriage now there is a black cat under the basket. It has to be there. So like this, so many things have come into rituals that have no real foundation. So who knows what Vedic culture is? We don't. But we do know something about this dress, that it represents the mood of the culture. That the culture, the Vedic culture, is a culture where sex is less in the center of society than in our modern world. In the modern world, sex is very much in the center of society, and when clothes are a bit sexy, that's sort of fun, You want to be a little sexy, otherwise, gosh. Yes, really. But Vedic culture is different. Vedic culture is a culture where sex is not so much in the center, and therefore those clothes are more concealing. Like tight jeans show everything. Whatever you have to offer, it's clear. it's all on display. Yesterday there was a lady on the plane who was well developed around the top. And she had this incredibly tight t-shirt with a very kind of low round cut and in there was trying to jump out. And so, okay. I just saw Hare Krishna. The Vedic culture, you know, the ladies, they have this little piece in the front, sort of elegantly. So it's elegant, but it's also kind of a little bit more, in a way,
modest.
Okay, modest, yeah. Yeah, things like that, words like that. Modest, concealing, reserved. Which is better for spiritual life. So, of course, you know, there's something in between. I appreciate that. There's also, in the Western dress, a mode of goodness type of clothing. Yes. And that's also nice. Yes. So, we're not like speaking out strongly against Western dress, but still, and I'm not speaking out against the endeavor to start Krishna West. I think there's a place for that. But at the same time, I think this tradition has a value. And it's especially connected to worshipping the deities, this kind of dress. With the tilak and all. I can talk and talk and talk and talk an awful lot on a Sunday morning, but I could also ask you to see if you have some questions, and if you do, then I will. Okay. Yes. If you have deities at home on an altar, what do you do when you go away? There's a few months for holiday. Different things you can do. It depends how good they are, what material they're made of. When deities are made of marble, then they are very fragile. So then you have to be very careful in moving them. If they're made of brass, then maybe another devotee can put them on their altar for a while, and they were already doing something. And so then they just—it's like children, you know. What do you do with your children if you can't take them? Well, you gotta make sure that they get fed, isn't it? You know, you can't just say, "Well, children, we put you in a box for until you come back." Yeah. You find a few skeletons in the box. That's not a good idea. So that's one option, you know, find someone who can worship them, and especially if they're of metal, then it's easy. When it is wood, that's possible. When they're made of marble, you shouldn't take them out of the house, take them here and there, because they're going to break. So that's not so good. Sometimes then someone has to come to your house. But that's difficult. Therefore, to have marble deities is more difficult. It's a bigger issue. So be careful taking marble deities at home. When the deities are not so big, take them with you. Yeah, we have many. You have these swamis, and they have they walk around with beauty cases. There they go. Renunciants with beauty cases. Right? And yes, there are some real beauties in those cases. There is Krishna's in there. They carry the deities with them. I myself, I have a small golden Shiva. Purposely small, so that it keeps it simple. Silver box, can go around my neck, put in a bag, like the, my paraphernalia is sort of like one bag. This way I can, it's not so much, I can do it all around. Then, in Bengal, there was a member of parliament, you know, for India, and his name was Tarun Kanti Ghosh. And Tarun Kanti Ghosh was a Vaishnava, and he was very famous for his Kirtan campaign. He got voted in office by doing Kirtan, going around the villages of Bengal and doing Kirtan, and they voted for him. So Prabhupada liked him. He said he is the highest placed Vaishnava in India. So he was also an owner of some newspapers and so on. And he had a big house. And then in the garden, there was a temple. And in the temple, whenever he was home, he was worshipping the demons. And when he wasn't home, then what to do? So one time, I was on a train and with another devotee who used to do this kind of service of keeping connections with VIPs and so on. He said, Tarun Kanti Ghosh is on the train. We got to go and see him. So we went at 6 in the morning. We went to see him. And there he was, and he had like a wooden box. And when the box was opened, it was a whole altar. And everything was in there, the puja box, all the puja paraphernalia, the sand, everything was in there, the sandalwood, he had all the stuff in there. And then in the lid, there were pictures of his altar. And he was just worshipping the pictures of his deities. And doing the same puja as at home, but this time doing it to the deities. And in that way, he kept on doing the same puja, but couldn't carry his big model deities, so he did it through the pictures. And it says in scripture that Krishna can manifest either in a picture or in a statue. So it's totally autonomous. So Tarun Kanti Ghosh, intelligent man, minister, they know these things. Anyway, that's so. Sometimes I tell people, all right, if you can't worship your deity, if you can't take him with you, take a picture with you of the deity and worship that. Another question.
Yeah. Well, I'd say there's a times where one simply has to accept the fact that, you know, say they have some deities at home and then circumstances change, and then one feels that actually one's actually doing a disservice to one's deities trying to keep them in the situation that they're in, and it's time to find them somewhere else. Is that all right situation, or is that simply just one's blocking excuse?
Well, sometimes there are parents who really feel that they can't look after their children anymore. And, you know, they're very destitute and in great poverty. So they get them adopted somewhere. So is that justified? It may be in some conditions, right, if parents do that with their kids. But it's not like an ordinary thing, you know, it's not something. And, I mean, unless it's an emergency, if any parents just get their kids adopted, so, okay, yeah, that's one less, yeah, great. So, it's of that level of intensity, you know, giving the deities away, I mean, it's of that level of intensity. It's got to be really, really, really very, very impossible. Then, yes. Why not? And then you find someone But if they don't worship him, you've got to pay. Because you're responsible. You accepted them. So, no, but they were not installed. Sorry, Swami. I never installed those deities. Aha. That's the trick. If you don't install them, then Prabhupada said Kirtan's installation. And you have to have kirtan. And even if you begin to worship, installation. As soon as you begin to worship, that is the installation. So this whole idea, install deities, not install deities. Actually, as soon as you worship them, they're installed. Krishna's present. So it's sort of saying, well, Krishna, I have no time for you. I mean, really, would love to worship you, but I really have no time. Maybe it's time to make time. Maybe something went wrong in your life. And what went wrong is that you have no time. So it's giving deities away and finding a home for them. Of course, Srila Prabhupada many times worshipped some deities and then brought them in, like Radha Gopinath he brought to Australia, things like that. But that was different. That was to start for preaching. So acharyas may do that sometimes, worship a deity and then give the deity to someone. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was given a Govardhan Shiva. And his worship was very simple. He would just cry, and he would bathe the deity with his tears. Of course, you have to have a lot of tears to bathe the deity, most of us. Don't have that many tears. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had, so he would just bathe the deity with his tears. After 3 years, he gave that same Shiva to Raghunath Das Goswami. He gave it away. And Raghunath Das then, he was told, bathe the deity with water and offer 8 Tulsi Manjaris. Then later, Sri Damodar, who had been put in charge of Raghunath by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, Sri Damodar made an arrangement that someone was bringing some sweets every day. So, then also offered some sweets. So if you worship Govardhan, lift over some sweets in general. Krishna likes sweets. Not too many. You have to offer him some sweets. So. You know, a few raisins and a few cashew nuts, you know, and Krishna is looking like. Is that it today? Yeah. Jeez, yeah. Thanks, pal. That's really nice. Yeah. Yeah. It's gonna be nice. Yeah.
Worshiping the deity in mind.
Yeah. You can do it in the mind, yeah. To do it proper, to really do it nice, you can also do it really quick in the mind, you know, sort of like offering. Okay, goodbye. It's not all in the mind, right? So the problem when we do things in the mind is that we do it mostly, we give it less attention, and eventually our bhakti diminishes actually. Therefore, this worship in the mind is something I'm afraid of it myself. I do some things in the morning. Sometimes I don't. I have like a more elaborate altar with some pictures, and I have a simple one, like a Shiva in a box, right? And sometimes I don't take out all the pictures when I'm in transit. So when I'm somewhere for one night, then I just, and then I still offer incense and a lamp and things like this, offer one hour. But then I do that to the pictures, and those that have the pictures in my mind, right? And I say a mantra to the Aim Guru, Om Param Guru. So I worship a few generations of my children. Then in the mind, and instead of the pictures. But to do the whole thing in the mind, there's a risk that it goes down. So I'm afraid of that myself, so I don't do. But others, they do. I know some who do, and some do it very elaborately. Some are great meditators. Some people can meditate like me, and offer me huge offerings all in the mind. Cooking everything, collecting the ingredients, see, clean up.
And make a sweet rice.
Yeah. So it's it.
Time person who gives.
It's just like japa, you know. Japa, you can chant loud, you can chant softly, or you can chant in the mind. Three types of japa. Gayatri, we also chant in the mind. Well, when you're tired, it gets hard to chant the Gayatri in the mind. I had times that first time fell asleep. Okay, started again. Second time fell asleep. Third time fell asleep. Yeah, in the garden when I was tired. So, okay, I'm going to change the sky tree later. Yeah, it's like that kind of weird. So, yeah, quality is important. So the mind is okay, if you can trust your mind.
So then you've been in the jari and you've done some daily worship, and that's your life routine in a way, and then you're not doing daily worship.
Yeah. You were back in that position, not me. But.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you just worship wherever you want, and see you wherever you want.
Well, it's true that deities stay with you. Yeah? If you worship the deity, then they stay with you. One year I was traveling and I was in Spain, and I met Mama Mantra, who at the time was the temple president of Delhi Temple, right? And Mama Mantra, Indian, I knew him well, and he's also a lawyer, you know, he's a lawyer. So they asked us to do a Sunday feast together. We were together on Sunday. So we did the Sunday feast together. So I was kind of leading it. So I asked him a question. I said, who is more beautiful? Parthasarathi from Delhi or Radhashyama Sundar from Vrindavan? Since I am from my home temple is Vrindavan and his home temple is Delhi. Right? So he said, Parthasarathi, of course. I said, my dear Mahamantra, I said, you know very well that when Krishna is in Vrindavan, right, that there, that his heart is there. And, you know, and therefore, because his heart is there, Krishna is full of love in Vrindavan, right, even more so than in Delhi. Therefore, in Vrindavan, he's more beautiful. He said, you know, but when he goes out of Vrindavan, since he's a lawyer, he has to argue, you know. So he had a whole long argument. Since he goes out of Vrindavan, you know, then Krishna is very merciful. He goes out of mercy, out of Vrindavan. And because of that mercy, he's very beautiful. Therefore, Parthasarathi for me. Anyway, like this, we were arguing back and forth for quite some time, and that was the Sunday program. But in the end, okay, in the end, after a lot of arguing, I offered him some compromise, as you do in the court, you know, like after a while. And the compromise was that the deity that is the most beautiful is the deity that you have served. That deity is the most beautiful. That deity becomes your deity and begins to manifest to you in a way that and it is, you get a special relationship if you serve the deity. Like I've been allowed to serve Radha Shyama Sundara in Vrindavan. And I was in Belgium for 3 months, pujari. At the end they fired me because I fell asleep in the last arti. I'm a hopeless pujari. But anyway, I was. Take all those for Krishna. Yeah, there's that further deity worship. I mean, the whole building is for the deity. Well, I think when you begin deity worship at home, you are not accepting the deity at home under the same conditions as in the temple, where there has to be a mongolite at 4:30. In home worship, it's not like that. You don't have to worship by that standard. There's some flexibility. In home worship, you can say, I make these and these offerings every day, at least waking the deity, at least cleaning the altar, maybe making one arti every day, and one offering, something. Another rule can be, you know, you offer what you eat in the house to the deity. Whatever you eat in the house, offer first to the deity. And at night, you put the deity to rest. That's kind of a home standard. And then you can, at least once a week, you should, you know, change the dress and so on. And you can go a bit more elaborate if you start bathing the deity and all that. So, at home, it's more flexible. So you can, you should not let your home worship interfere with the temple. Yeah. Prabhupada pointed out that the deity in the temple is our main deity worship, and we should not let our other deity, our private deity worship, interfere with that. So when there are, not that you just say, well, I'll stay home because I have to do my own puja, so I'm not going to the temple. No. You can go to the temple and then keep your own puja simple, so you can do that also. And then it can be another time. Of course, you know, when we get older, things may be different. Life gets more simple, simplify life. You know, always go to the temple. And in family life also, it's not always possible to go to the temple. But on Sundays, on the weekend, it's good to go. Because these are deities here in Sydney, they're for the whole city, for all of us. So, in the back, you'll see the question.
Maharaj, I had a question, the Acharyas in this hall, the deities, which are very special.
Yeah.
For example, we have Radha Gopinath here, and it's called by Prabhupada, and then I was reading how Prabhupada requested Radha Gopinath to take care of the devotees rather than the devotees taking,
Yeah.
So, how do we relate to this, do the deities take the mood, the Acharya request them to take? How do we understand?
Yeah, very much. I mean, Krishna is inclined towards his devotee, and the devotee is inclined towards Krishna. So, therefore, when the devotee prays, and the devotee has made a big sacrifice for Krishna, then Krishna is inclined to reciprocate with that prayer. So when you have an acharya like Prabhupada who made so much effort for Krishna, then Krishna will be inclined to do anything he asks. Therefore, deities that are installed by great personalities, they are special. In India, you have so many deities, so many temples. Like they say Vrindavan, 5,000 temples. They say Jaipur, 25,000 temples. That's what they say. And in some of these temples, every day some very basic worship is done. The only one who goes to the temple is some pandit who does a little panditji, does a little puja, goes home, and he gets paid for this. So that's different than a temple where Krishna is worshipped by great devotees. In Jaipur, I went to one of those temples, a temple that was well known by constructed by a wealthy family in India that has constructed many temples in India. And I went to that temple, and then there was some prasad, and those were these little white sugar balls, there was a prasad. And that was all they ever offered. They never cooked for the deity. But then if you go to Radha Govinda in Jaipur, they are cooking so many offerings. There's a big standard. Rupa Goswami's deity, they're very seriously worshipping them. So, the acharya that installs the deity and then the worship that the deity is receiving makes Krishna manifest his mercy. If the worship goes down and down, Krishna will also withdraw. So these deities, they came here and Prabhupada prayed. And Prabhupada did these things. They brought the deity, this one, for Sydney. And in Paris, he put Paris Ishvara, in London Ishvara, to look after the whole city. And now we have in Mayapur installed Panchatattva for the whole world, for everyone, for the whole world. So deities are presiding deities of places, just as Govindaji are presiding deities of Jaipur. Traditionally installed by the king, these city deities, and they are. The whole city goes there. Tirupati, Nathadwar, so many places where deities are presiding deities of a town in India. We have many such places. And so these are the deities for Sydney, and they will always be. Even if you open up six more temples in Sydney, can be some bigger, and even the deities bigger, these will still be Radha Gopinath. These will still be special deities. There's still special mercy here. Prabhupada's prayer is still there. So, all deities of Krishna are merciful, but these ones more merciful, because Prabhupada asked. What you say? I don't know verbatim, but like he said, Prabhupada asked the deities to take care of the devotees. He basically said that, you know, I'm leaving you here in the hands of these devotees. They are not qualified. You please take care of them. Kurma can tell us. I mean, Kurma would know verbatim because he was here.
Books and lectures, Jim Hansen lectures.
Yeah, that's in the Lilamrita. Yeah. As long as you keep me going with questions, I'll keep them going, otherwise, I'm going. Yes. See, in many houses, the children, they know Krishna has not eaten, no. But Krishna is eating, no? Children have to wait. So, it works fine. I was just staying in one house, two children, one three, the other one, and both know. The one of three and the one of one, they both knew Krishna is eating, we have to wait. You have children and you have to train them that Krishna is first. Yeah. You can't let the children just do whatever they want. No, you have to train them. Everything that's cooked in the house must be offered to Krishna. Everything. And whatever is brought into the house must be offered to Krishna, and if it's not offerable to Krishna, then don't bring it into the house. Not all children agree with this, but it doesn't matter. I don't know, tell me. You know Sanjay. You know many things more than me, because you're a Gujarati. Comes out, Prabhupada wanted, when he said cleanliness and punctuality, it obviously means that you're serious about the deities. So you want attention to be given to these things. Yeah.
So, there are many different ways of looking at that, the dress that we wear. And one thing is the fact that just simply walking down the street, someone recognizes that we're a Hare Krishna devotee. But then the other thing, some people will say that it's not actually a question of external dress, it's a question of condition of the heart.
Yeah, but we saw that in deity worship that it's meant like that, to regulate our external behavior, because the condition of the heart is not so pure yet, and that it takes a long time for the heart to become actually pure. Condition of the heart is not just about sentiment and nice devotional sentiment towards Krishna, but the condition of the heart is also, I have all these attachments to all kinds of material enjoyment and even sinful activities, and now what to do? And that's the case. So the deity worship is therefore initially externally purifying us. But because people in this age are so strongly affected by sinful desire and sinful contamination, therefore they must chant Hare Krishna along with it, side by side. That's why you have to keep a balance between chanting and puja. People from India, they very easily do puja in the morning, lots of puja, but chanting, and then the chanting is very quick and very cheap. Finish 16 rounds, yes, but it's only 45 minutes. How can you chant 16 rounds in 45 minutes? Yes, I can do. No, that's not quality. It takes 2 hours, 1.5 for those who are very fast and we don't breathe very much in between. and those who actually breathe in between, they probably, and if you drink a cup of tea in between somewhere, which in the morning is nice, especially in the winter, then 2 hours go pretty quick. Even 2.5 happens, I chanted this morning, I was up, but that 1 hour of time difference today, that got me, I was like, I was already having 8 anyway, and it was an 8-hour jet lag to turn into a 9-hour jet lag, and it's like getting better all the time. Anyway, so for that I didn't finish all my rounds today. So it's not so easy to chant 16 hours. So to balance that, we cannot put too much energy into the deity worship at the expense of the chanting. It's very nice, all the deity worship, but what about the chanting? Chanting must be done. I have no time for all these things. Then simplify the deity worship. Someone under the care of someone else. Once, just a story, once before Krishna consciousness, my former wife, she had a cat, and we had the cat and we gave it to some friends to look after. And when we came back to pick up the cat, he said, he said, where's the cat? He said, oh, we sent it, and they killed it. We go, what? You killed our cat? He said, yeah, it passed urine on the bed. And then they killed it. So it's always risky to give to other people. So when you give your deity to someone else, you take a risk. Should everyone have deities? No. But everyone should have an altar with some pictures. at home. Everyone should have an altar with some pictures at home. And there they should offer everything they eat, and they should keep the altar clean. That at least. An altar with some pictures, and you offer, and you keep it clean, and you offer what you eat. That's the minimum you should have at home. And if you want deities, then you have to do a little more. And you have to, wake them, keep it clean, offer at least an ivy every day. Okay, can't dress every day. If you can, it's good. If you can bathe a deity, it's good. Yeah. But don't take on too much. But at least once a week, okay, bathing the deity, changing the dress, etc. But not everyone has that. But pictures, an altar with some pictures, that is necessary. So that at least we offer everything we need. Good little plate, for Krishna. Somebody's dress, you can't wash them. Okay, the deities have now withdrawn.